This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from In Other Words Women's Books and Resources, serving you from its new location at 8 Northeast Killingsworth at Williams. In Other Words is your local nonprofit feminist bookstore and resource center, offering community space, gifts, tools for the revolution, women's writings, and much more. 503-232-6003 or inotherwords.org.
You're listening to Chicanismo on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland's first radio program to focus on the unique struggle of the Chicano. On the 4th of this month, various pro-immigrant and labor groups organized a rally against harsh immigration laws and bills such as H.R. 4437, also known as the Sensenbrenner Bill. H.R. 4437 will make it more difficult for legal immigrants to obtain U.S. citizenship and criminalize undocumented immigrants and those who assist them in any way under the guise of anti-terror. The rally here in Portland gathered up to 3,000 to 4,000 people and was barely touched by the media. Rallies in other cities gathered even more people. In D.C., the following Tuesday, over 20,000 people rallied outside of the U.S. Capitol, and in Chicago, last Friday, 100,000 people rallied in the streets in opposition to this legislation, and still the coverage was minimal at best. What does this say about the topic of immigration in the United States? The National Day Laborer Organizing Network kicked off a run that started in Los Angeles on the 4th that will continue to New York to build communities and awareness of immigration contributions and to bring attention to the unjust treatment of immigrants in this country. As of last Sunday, war resistors Pablo Paredes, Camilo Mejia, Aiden Delgado, as well as Fernando Suarez del Solar, whose son was killed in Iraq, began a 241-mile march from Tijuana, Mexico to San Francisco, California. In historic parallel to Gandhi's 241-mile salt march, the resistors hoped to draw attention to the unjust war in Iraq. Historian Howard Zinn said, "This is one of the most significant actions taken yet to dramatize the movement against the war, especially because it calls attention to the Latino population, the loss of Latino life in the war, and the unrecognized Latino opposition to the war." For more info, log on to www.guerreroazteca.org or www.swift.com. SmartVeterans.com. One of my guests for today's program is David Loera, educator, musician, and artist. He is also one of the original street performers of El Teatro Campesino. I want to briefly talk about some of the history of the Chicano movement for those listeners who aren't familiar. The roots of the movimiento started well before the Mexican-American War, but that war was somewhat of a birthplace of Chicano history because of the occupation and the struggles that Mexicans dealt with from that point on. Can you give some of your understanding of what this historical content is?
Well, Carlos, first I'd like to thank you for your invitation. KABU is doing a lot of great things, in particular the programs on Chicano and Chicanismo. The best way to describe the Chicano movement, and I know there's been several versions, but I think that a Mexican writer that first described it as he was doing his research for his book that was soon to become a classic, and he called it El Laberinto de la Soledad. And in this book, he was writing about what it's like to be a Mexican. And interestingly enough, when he was doing this, he happened to be in Los Angeles, California, doing research. And he happened to observe the characteristics of a new breed of Mexicano, and he observed the characteristics, behavior of the Mexican American, and through this, through his observations, he noticed that the Mexicano was neither a Mexican or an American, because he was rejecting his past to a point that he was rejecting his parents, and at the same time, he was being rejected by his oppressors in the United States. But this was the beginning of the movimiento, and then soon enough, it became the first chapter. He called his first chapter on Laberinto de la Soledad, El Pachuco. And later, it came to be the progenitor of the Chicano movement. And briefly, the Chicano movement is really can be described in three different fronts. One being the movement with the Chicano farm workers, the land free movement in in New Mexico, and the urban movement that was led by Corky Gonzalez of Denver, Colorado. And the three fronts of the Chicano movement can best be described as the first one described by Cesar Chavez, the leader of the farm workers movement, who was successful enough to organize not only the farm workers movement, but also turn into a social movement, which included students from the various universities of the United States and families who eventually became involved in the movement. And it was also revolutionized the labor movement in general here in the United States, because at that time it was becoming stale. The second part of the Chicano movement, I would say, is the urban movement that was led by organizer Corky Gonzalez, who was mainly from Denver, Colorado, and that's where he organized the youth. Mr. Gonzalez was originally employed with the United States government with the War on Poverty, and he was responsible for organizing Chicano youth, finding them employment and getting them to go to school. But he soon realized that this type of effort was designed for failure, and he quickly dropped out of this program and began his own movement, organizing Chicanos in the urban movements. And he soon was responsible for leading movements or walkouts, as they call it, in the late 60s, to have Chicano youths protest the discrimination in the high schools. And the third movement, I would say, was that one that was led by López Reyes Tijerina. At one time, Mr. López Reyes Tijerina was an organizer, spiritual leader, and he became a member of the Christian community as opposed to Catholicism. And as he was organizing people in the eastern part of New Mexico in what is now called the Tierra Amarilla, he realized that he was organizing for the wrong movement. And he soon realized that people in that part, especially the Hispanic people, that's what they like to be called, were in need of having their rights returned, as they were the original owners of the land that they lived in. Because at that time, the real owners were Anglo farmers and just people that generally owned the land. So that's how he became started his movement. And he soon organized the local Chicano population in Tierra Amarilla, to the point that he led his people to occupy the courthouse in Tierra Amarilla, New Mexico, and eventually led to his arrest. And it became national news. And Carlos, this is again like it was really interesting. It was interesting phenomenon, because at the same time that López Reyes Tijerina was organizing against the land grant movements, the other movements were taking place, like Cesar Chavez was leading his strikes in the Llano, California, eventually led to the lettuce grape boycott, which eventually led to signing contracts in Southern California, as well as what was taking place in Denver, Colorado, with Corky Gonzalez. But in all, the Chicano movement had a very interesting outcome and a very different development. So there's a lot to be learned, and we hope that we can continue this movement. Muchas gracias.
I'm also joined today by journalist, writer, and activist Ivan Rivero and Luz Villarroel, representative of the Mexican consulate here in Portland, Oregon. She was also the first professor to teach Chicana feminism at OSU and to obtain her PhD at OSU. We were talking about Chicano history in the United States, but at the same time that those three fronts were going on, there was also a movement here in Oregon, which I know that Luz was a part of, and I know that Ivan is very familiar with.
Thank you, Carlos, and thank you, Ivan and David. As I have mentioned to you before, the Chicano movement has different perspectives, historical perspectives, so it depends who is talking about it and who's writing about it. In Oregon, my perspective has taken on a feminist flavor because I was fortunate enough to have grown up reading about Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz, reading The Woman's Question, reading about Mao Zedong, and actually having learned a lot of my politics from Angela Davis, La Virgen de Guadalupe, La Llorona, and in general from many Chicana feminist writers. My politics go back probably to the 1950s because of my mother's way of teaching me about the women's rights. So the women's movement was in Mexico was actually a lot stronger way before it was here in the United States. Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz was one of the first feminist writers in the 1500s. In Oregon, though, the Chicano movement probably took on a real strong lead right during the anti-Vietnam War, the women's movement, the Black Panthers Party movement, and the Brown Berets movement. The Chicana feminism, it took time because, in my opinion, because many of the men in the Chicano movement, unfortunately, did not keep up with their writings on Marxism, Leninism, and feminist theories. So, from my observation, a lot of what was going on in the movement was pretty much led by men and structured by men and without any consideration for women. And oftentimes when women were considered, it was because women did take the lead and did require that the men think about the women's movement. Although many of us did not align with the Caucasian women's movement because we understood that although their movement was very much an upper class, our movement was a class, a race, and an immigration movement. So this is where the difference of the Chicana women's movement to the Caucasian or European American women's movement. And I'm going to go ahead and stop here so that I can let Yvonne maybe go ahead and respond or add on her own perception.
I want to bring up an important point too. Being that you were born in Mexico, I want to point out that since you've been here for the amount of time that you've been in the United States, that you can identify with Chicana. Just because you're not born in the United States doesn't mean that you're not Chicano.
Right. This is subject of debate and has been for a long, long time. However, this has not kept me from being in organizations that are Chicano organizations and Chicano organizations as well. I think it's really, really important that we, you know, there's some academicians who, when in Mexico, they declare themselves to be Chicanos. And when in the U.S., they declare themselves to be Mexicanos. Because there's always this box where they put you, right, where you can only be Chicano if you're poor, if you're uneducated, if you're ignorant. And there is a number of people who are writing, who are, you know, who are doctors, doctors in philosophy who are, in important places in society. And they seem to lose the Chicano, you know, the Chicano perspective. And then they become Hispanic then. So there is this thing, you know, in which if you're going back to what really, really makes you Chicano, is that you cannot forget about who brought you here, who brought you to this, you know, through this life. And it is our forebears, you know, it's our roots, is people, you know, mostly people from a Hispanic, I'm sorry, from not Hispanic in the sense, but it's an indigenous, mm-hmm. it's an indigenous root that runs really deeply in our blood, mm-hmm. in our culture. You know, this is perhaps this is what really makes us Mexican to a certain degree. And so I see that the correlation, the parallels between mm-hmm. being Chicano and Mexicano are not that different, or they could be, you know, mm-hmm. because we need to talk about the politics of the border. We need to talk about Mexico's economy and its politicians. We need to talk about the movement of people coming here. We need mm-hmm. to talk about the Second World War. We need to talk about the braceros. Along with those braceros, there were women, very, very strong women, mm-hmm. who sought out for their kids, for the women. And so in the 70s, you know, and of course because I love literature and poetry, we have, you know, like a different perspective. And the different perspective is that women, these are women who were seeing things with their own eyes. Women who would not take the words that were already crafted by the Aztec gods, meaning the leaders in the Chicano movement, but who dared to have their own voices. Many of these women were feminists, and not only feminists, but there were also lesbians, in the case, for instance, Cherie Moraga.
Gloria Anzaldúa.
Gloria Anzaldúa as well. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, in their personal search, you know, they were able to craft a voice that, in my opinion, speaks about what is different or how is it different to be, you know, to have all these things, all these components of race, class, poverty, you know, many of our people speaking as a group. We have many of our parents were performing agricultural work. Not everyone's, right? But at the same time, there's, you know, living in the fields, exploitation, etc. And how is this different when there's that woman's perspective? You know, there's what Luz was saying about the, you know, how this is different from what is perceived as feminism in the U.S. is that perhaps for a feminist, a woman who's a feminist, this, you know, this perception includes having children. And for this, I want to mention Dolores Huerta. Mm-hmm. Dolores Huerta went hand in hand mm-hmm. with Cesar Chavez. They went into the unknown mm-hmm. In the 60s. They, you know, I remember attending an event where she spoke. She had 11 children already. Mm-hmm. No man around. But with 11 children, she went and fought for what she truly believed in. And she's a devout Catholic as well. This is really interesting because, you know, time passed and everything. She's in the editorial board of MS Magazine, which is a feminist magazine. But what I'm trying to illustrate here is that Chicana feminism takes another, you know, another perspective, because it's a perspective of work. It's the perspective of working women. It's the perspective of women who are not giving up on having children, mm-hmm. on becoming mothers and women, but continuing to foster the growth of our children. You know, and so there is, you know, important differences between what it means to be Chicana for mm-hmm. us Latinas and what it means to be Chicana for a middle class white woman who has her own issues. Mm-hmm.
You know, Ivan, I want to touch on something that you have already touched on the aspect of indigenous. I think the Chicano movement for many of us made us aware of our indigenous culture. As many of you know, Mexican people are very mixed. In fact, we have been called the cosmic race by Vasconcelos. So we are very much mixed with Middle Eastern, with Asian, Native American, European, and I think this movement made us be proud of our indigenous culture, where before we were Latinos or Hispanics. This gave us that identity. Also, the Chicano movement, you know, can be described in as many ways as there are people who will classify themselves Chicanos. So a lot of times there's debate, there's argument on what is the right definition of the Chicano movement or the Chicano identity. The way that I have described it is there's the movement could be political, social, cultural, or basically a movement of identity. For many of our youth today, they don't even understand the word. They don't even understand where it has come from. From my mother's generation, the word Chicano meant dirty, meant pig. But for my generation, it meant it was a movement of political power. It meant that we were going to improve the educational system for the betterment of our youth. It meant that we were going to have better social services and that we were going to have a better cultural understanding and self-identity. I think the Chicano movement allowed us to understand ourselves better and at the same time identify with who we really are. The physique or the way that a person looks, oftentimes prior to the Chicano movement, I remember many of us dyeing our hair so that we could look more like a white woman, you know. And during the Chicano movement, we took on this pride where all of a sudden we felt we were dark, beautiful, and appreciated our looks, our indigenous looks. Where if that movement had not been there, I think many of us probably would have not achieved the academic level that we did, you know, the my generation. And again, I'm speaking from my perspective. We have a long way to go, and I think that every school should have classes that focus on feminism. And my understanding of feminism is not to oppress men or to say that men are less than, but to be partners with men and to acknowledge that a woman, just like a man, can be, you know, intelligent and can complement each other.
Right, which is, I think, one of the principles of feminism, you know, which is if we're going to speak about equality, then this means that respect has to go both ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I cannot speak in derogatory ways mm-hmm. of you because you're different. But that means that you have to consider me an equal partner. Mm-hmm. And so how can we get there? How can mm-hmm. we get there if so many of us have mm-hmm. seen our mothers being beaten down? If we have seen abuse in every way? If we have seen economic abuse? If we have seen physical abuse?
Mm-hmm.
So how do we, you know, this, when we talk about feminism, and we talk about feminism from a Chicana perspective, one of the, you know, undergoing or the one of the things that appears in every single group is staying away from violence, keeping your children safe,
mm-hmm.
and then putting a stop to the man to men abusing you. You see it among indigenous women who do not speak Spanish. You see it in urban groups of every socioeconomic level.
Mm-hmm.
You see it also among women who have a lot of power and influence. So this issue of really, you know, perhaps the idea of being equal, completely equal, you know, of having relations where there's equity, perhaps it's an ideal that is going to take a lot more time. But one of the most important things is stopping the violence, stopping mm-hmm. the violence within our families.
Mm-hmm. And along with that, you know, equality doesn't mean that we're the same, but that we have the same right, the same access. Another theme that I wanted to bring up, oftentimes during the 70s and earliest during the Chicano movement, the question was, who is really a Chicano? And I remember when I started joining the Chicano movement, there were a lot of people here from Texas, and oftentimes they would say, you're not a Chicana because you weren't born here. You're a Mexicana, and when I bring up this conversation with young people today, for me, if you believe in equality, if you believe in identifying yourself with your indigenous roots, if you believe that men and women can be partners, if you believe that we have the same rights as other indigenous people in this land, then you believe in the Chicano movement. However, several years ago, I attended a lecture at UCLA, and a Native American person defined Chicano as coming from the Nahuatl language, meaning people of this land, and he basically pronounced it Mexica. That was his version, and people will debate with me because, again, as I mentioned before, Chicano is defined in different ways, and depending on what level of awareness you are or what political level, social or educational level. But for me, basically, it just means being more human and accepting myself and other people for who they are. I would like to recommend two books for anybody out there that's looking for more information. And actually, you can find those books if you just Google it or go Yahoo. It's Mexican-American or Chicana Feminism. And there's one that I read many, many years ago. And actually, I haven't seen very many copies, so I am very lucky to have one of the few copies around. It's The Chicana Feminism by Marta Cotera. She's like a pioneer for this type of literature. And then one that was written locally by co-author by Dr. Carlos Maldonado and Dr. Gilberto Garcia. It's The Chicano Experience in the Northwest. And you can actually buy that. Again, you can find it through Google. Again, The Chicano Experience in the Northwest, Carlos Maldonado, Gilberto Garcia. And I actually published a chapter in here about the contributions of Chicanas in the Northwest.
You have a book or two that you've written yourself. You want to talk about that
yes.
a little bit?
I actually, of course, I did my thesis on the self-esteem of Chicano students at the a comparison study with 4-year institutions of higher learning and 2-year institutions. And then I also wrote a chapter in a book at a Western Washington University on the recruitment and retention of minorities, a how-to manual.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, I want to thank you, Luz, mm-hmm. Ivan, and David for joining
thank
me
you,
today for this program. I think a lot of people are going to find out some really good information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
And we are talking about the KABU Youth Collective, the Underground, March 22nd from 6 to 7.
The theme is My First Blank.
And then on March 31st, we have the Youth Randomonium, the music show, from 11 to midnight, where you bring in music and you play it. And preferably, it's music by people under the age of 21, like youth music, by youth people, or it can just be whatever you want.
Okay, like, does the music have to be, like, current day? Like,
no.
Teens or whatever, or does it, or could it also be teens in the past?
I'm pretty sure it can be teens in the past. And it's after 10 o'clock, so whatever language you want can be used.
Well, I guess that could come in handy, I guess, from
it
editing
can.
Wise.
Why, yes, it can.
Have you wanted to jump into the volunteer pool at KABU but have never gotten around to it? Wait no longer. Volunteering during the membership drive is one of the best ways to get involved at the station. During the 3-week drive, we need many volunteers to answer the phones to take pledges from our happy listeners, help with data entry, get on the mic and encourage happy listeners to become even happier members. There's something for everyone to do. Jumping into the drive is a great way to meet other volunteers and to get a good feel for life at KABU. There are shifts available to meet any schedule. Don't delay. Call Ani, the volunteer coordinator, at 503-231-8032 at extension 213 or email her at volunteer@kabu.org and dive on in.
This is the Thursday Morning Radio Zine for Thursday, March 16th. Coming up next on Art Focus, Julie Bernard speaks with Brian Surath, Executive Director of Disjecta, a cutting-edge group dedicated to visual and performing arts. They'll discuss the group's efforts to acquire historic Portland building for an art center.
And at 11, Democracy Now! Looks at this week's Israeli raids on a Palestinian prison and a commemoration of the third anniversary of the killing of protester Rachel Corrie by an Israeli bulldozer.
And now stay tuned for Art Focus.